Meningitis is up there with rabies as one of the most scary conditions known to man. The word meningitis means inflammation of the meninges, or the membrane that surrounds the brain. However, somewhere along the way, the germ theorists hijacked the word, and now it usually is taken to mean infection caused by bacteria, fungi, or imaginary viruses. This has been the basis of fear campaigns, widespread use of antibiotics for both alleged treatment and prevention, and even vaccination campaigns. How did this come to be, and what are the real causes of meningitis? Let's take a look as we blow the lid on yet another fraudulent, or at least misunderstood, area of allopathic medicine. The common belief that Neisseria meningitidis causes meningitis is not a scientific fact. It is another germ theory fancy that has no published experimental evidence. The appearance of meningitis in the 19th century, with N. meningitidis as the alleged culprit, makes no sense even on their own terms. Why would a bacterial species that is found so commonly in humans suddenly turn murderous against a tiny minority? Meningitis is a condition, not a specific disease entity. Unfortunately, the patient's very life is in jeopardy as the doctors foolishly wage extermination campaigns against microbial scapegoats and fail to treat the real causes of illness. What does Agenda 2030 and meningitis have in common? Well, they converge on a journey that your mega corporations and globalist organisations want to take us on through their global roadmap. In 2019, the World Health Organization consulted their dream team, including the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, GlaxoSmithKline, and the International Federation of Pharmaceutical Manufacturers and Associations. If you've not heard of the latter, it is the fixer organization for your friendly neighborhood drug suppliers.
It's not personal, Sonny. It's strictly business.
This is all wrapped up and delivered in the marketing brochure that drops words such as sustain, sustained, sustainable, and finally, sustainable development goals. Before we get into meningitis, it is worth taking a quick segue to see how much the unfounded and unscientific claims are on full display here. The IFPMA has set up a website called Team Vaccines, hashtag Vaccines for Life. On their main page, they state that we've seen vaccines do amazing things. Every year they help save millions of people all around the world at all ages and stages of life. What is unusual is that they've suggested that they can back this up by listing a citation for this incredible claim. As you know, we always follow the trail to see if it leads to any foundational scientific evidence. In this case, it's a link to the WHO's December 2019 newsroom article. December 2019. What was happening then? Anyway, this is a quote facts and pictures slideshow that provides exactly zero evidence for its claims about vaccinations. In other words, they are relying on their usual level of evidence. Contrary to popular belief, meningitis does not mean infection. By definition, meninges refers to the membrane complex that surrounds the brain and spinal cord. Therefore, meningitis simply means inflammation of the meninges. However, most alleged health institutions around the world will state the cause is usually bacterial or viral. Meningitis is a serious condition that comes with high death rates, but that does not mean that microorganisms are the causal factor. In fact, like much so-called common knowledge, there are no studies to back up their claims. When it comes to alleged bacterial meningitis, the whipping boy is Neisseria meningitidis, the poor bacteria that has been etched into the allopathic medical books as a, quote, exclusive human pathogen. With regard to Neisseria meningitidis, Wikipedia makes the claim that it is spread through saliva and other respiratory secretions during coughing, sneezing, kissing, and chewing on toys. Inhalation of respiratory droplets from a carrier, which may be someone who is themselves in the early stages of disease, can transmit the bacteria. Close contact with a carrier is the predominant risk factor. Amusingly, but at least honestly, that paragraph ends with, quote, citation needed. This is more of the usual nonsense from the bankrupt germ theory. The claim that a particular bacterial species jumps between people to then make them sick. When you consult medical textbooks, they all emphatically state that the Austrian pathologist Anton Weiss Selbaum discovered that Neisseria meningitis caused meningitis in 1887, and there are a myriad of articles in scientific journals which make the same claim and cite Weiss Selbaum's paper, which translates to On the Etiology of Acute Cerebrospinal Meningitis. However, this elusive paper is nowhere to be found on linked platforms such as Google Scholar, where we can see that although hundreds of articles have cited Weiss Selbaum, his actual paper is not available to view. We have encountered such buried papers previously, and it certainly raises suspicion because they are claimed to be so pivotal, and yet one would suspect that most of the authors citing Weiss Selbaum have not actually read his report. The Lancet published an article in 2019 titled Standing on the Shoulders of Giants, Two Centuries of Struggle Against Meningococcal Disease, that also cites the elusive meningitis paper. However, in the same paragraph, they also cited a publication from some contemporaries of Weiss Selbaum. They published a paper the year after him that came with the similar title, On the Etiology of Epidemic Cerebrospinal Meningitis. On obtaining an English translation of this paper, we find that the authors state in their introduction, quote, During a mild meningitis cerebrospinalis epidemic in March 1886, we found in some cadavers dissected by us that the disease progressed without further localization, while in others, as is usually the case, pneumonia lobaris had also occurred. We observed the presence of a single species of microorganism in all cases in animal bacteriological examination of the exudate. The microorganism was always the same in the exudate of the meningitis and in that of the hepatized pulmonary alveoli, so that after a careful study of its biological properties, we have named it meningococcus to indicate by this name that it is actually the cause, that severe epidemic disease that is localized exclusively on the meninges and spinal cord. Wow, that gives the impression that they made a huge scientific discovery, but it quickly becomes apparent that they simply made the assumption that the presence alone of the bacteria indicated it was the cause. In other words, they thought that a healthy person was somehow infected with the microbes and then they attacked the meninges, causing a serious illness. But their methodology to make this claim was insufficient, as the findings in humans were limited to observational findings, from which they could only form a hypothesis at best. They produced no experimental evidence to show what had actually made the human cases sick in the first place. Instead, they described the quote, pathogenic effects of the bacteria by injecting material from sick patients directly into the abdominal cavities of rabbits. Of course, this is standard practice from the germ promoters who resort to unnatural exposure routes and uncontrolled experiments that lack independent variables. In fact, in their paper, they describe some of the other similar techniques being employed by various contemporaries. These are agents that are used in guinea pigs or rabbits have been found to be pathogenic, either to inoculation with cheesy tuberculosis material from humans, molasses and vignal, or for histological examination of the intestines of animals that died of a form macroscopically resembling tuberculosis, ebirth nocard, or the insertion of cotton into the abdomen of a guinea pig charged with the exhalation of various patients living in a hospital ward, Chantemesse. Or finally, inoculation with a bacillus isolated from the sputum of a measles lung patient, Manfredi. Not exactly what happens in nature, but this is what they expect you to believe. Another interesting observation is that they introduced the word virus halfway through the paper, although I should point out that in that era, virus was thought to be a fluid contagion. But it is patently obvious that this does not equate to the contagion that they are implying and is being claimed to this day. For example, with regard to bacterial meningitis, the CDC webpage states that generally the germs that cause bacterial meningitis spread from one person to another. Certain germs can spread through food. How people spread the germs often depends on the type of bacteria. Wikipedia states that Neisseria meningitidis is spread through saliva and other respiratory secretions during coughing, sneezing, kissing, and chewing on toys. Inhalation of respiratory droplets from a carrier, which may be someone who is themselves in the early stages of disease, can transmit the bacteria. Close contact with a carrier is the predominant risk factor. Now we are into more inconsistencies with the germ theory. In order to fill the gaps, the story requires, quote, carriers who allegedly cause what has come to be known as asymptomatic transmission. This is where they concede that 10 to 25% of the population are walking around with Neisseria on board, but it doesn't cause any problems for them. However, we would point out that this is probably a major underestimation, and that probably everyone has at least some Neisseria meningitis on or in their body at some time. The reason I say this is because the official estimates of prevalence are based on reports such as the Stonehouse Survey, published in 1989. In the survey, over 6,000 nasopharyngeal swabs were taken from residents in Stonehouse, Gloucestershire, and they concluded that the bacteria was present in 10.9% of the samples. However, a positive result was only recorded when inoculated plates resulted in visible colony formation. If the bacteria were only present in small numbers, then a colony may not have formed on plating. Indeed, a 2016 paper in the Journal of Clinical Microbiology reported that testing by the more sensitive PCR method found double the number of, quote, carriers in the population. Once again, this was based on pharyngeal swabs taken from subjects on a single occasion. If you really want to search for these microbes in complex organisms, such as humans, then you would need to take samples from multiple areas over a period of time. In any case, it is an abysmal failure when it comes to Koch's postulates, as postulates 1, 3, and 4 remain unfulfilled, if not refuted. Arguably, postulate 2, the microorganism must be isolated from a diseased organism and grown in pure culture, has been observed since the 1880s, but then the clinical criteria for meningitis are not that specific, and even the establishment lists multiple possible causes for the disease. In summary, there exists no evidence that bacteria such as Neisseria or any other microorganisms are the causal agents of meningitis. Of course, when none of the scapegoat bacteria can be found at the scene, the medical establishment alleged that it must be aseptic meningitis, with the most common claimed cause being, quote, viral. In medical school, they would tell us about how the bugs were getting from people's noses into their brains. Subsequently, I discovered that these were fanciful speculations that had no evidential basis in the scientific literature. There is no doubt that meningitis is a serious condition. But the ridiculous marriage to germ theory that was foisted upon it in the late 1800s needs to be rejected. As I mentioned, the term means inflammation, and it is a condition, not a specific disease entity. The reason that antibiotics sometimes appear to work is likely through their anti-inflammatory mechanism, rather than killing an alleged bug. The microbes present in our body respond to the underlying terrain and can proliferate when tissue becomes compromised. But they do not have any ability to suddenly turn rogue and start attacking us. Not surprisingly, the antibiotics fail to resolve the condition in many cases, in which case an invented virus can often be blamed. And the alleged meningococcal septicemia looks remarkably like disseminated intravascular coagulation, the end result of an inflammatory response where microbes have been accused without substantive evidence. The end result of this tragic misunderstanding of biology is that it is seized upon by the medico-pharmaceutical industry to promote antibiotics for both alleged treatment and prevention, as well as vaccines, which cannot protect against something that has not been shown to be harmful in the first place. You will see various claims put forward to scare the public, including the WHO's assertion that, quote, vaccines offer the best protection against common types of bacterial meningitis. Keep in mind that this is tied in with globalist 2030 agendas. And for my family, we pay attention to what the scientific evidence reveals, rather than colourful brochures advising that an injection is the best way to health. At this point, there will be questions as to what causes meningitis, if not germs. As I have mentioned, it is a condition of the body, and it is a serious inflammatory response to a toxic insult. Each case will come with a different story and must be examined in detail for underlying causes of meningitis, whether they be pharmaceuticals such as chemotherapy or other over-the-counter medications like non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, vaccines, environmental chemicals, and other stressors. Thankfully, the condition is rare, and even in countries like New Zealand, where there have been major public propaganda campaigns surrounding alleged meningococcal disease, the number of deaths are and have always been very small. Despite this, meningococcal vaccines have made their way into childhood vaccination schedules in countries like New Zealand and the US. No doubt doctors remain baffled as to why the number of inflammatory conditions in children has gone through the roof in recent decades. You can check out all my other videos exposing much of the flawed evidence behind other so-called infectious diseases. As always, your best path to health is to focus on right thinking and right living. My ultimate guide to the principles of good health can be found in the pages of Terrain Therapy. If you enjoyed this video, please visit supportdrsam.com